I think maybe on item four, what we would like to hear any recollection you might have about other members of the Bixby family. I'll do that and then back up to three, which will take a little more interesting in the, I think, in early things around here. But as Jotham Bixby, I knew. Like, he died in, I think, 1916, something like that, and he and Aunt Margaret lived at this house at the foot of Junipero, right across from Bixby Park, that was shaken down in the earthquake. I used to go there occasionally for dinners and things like that, and we were always very impressed with him because he was had a big white beard, and Margaret always was dressed up in sort of fresh iron, lace frilly things, maybe the gay 90s style or something like that. And they had lots of silverware on the table and pretty grand manner, and I was quite impressed with it. But I was, see, about 8 years old when he died, and she died, I guess, I think shortly after that, the events. So that was all I knew of him. Amelia Bixby, of course, George H. I knew, but he passed away along in the early 20s and never really had anything to do with him. Is Amelia Bixby, who was his widow, became a real great bosom friend of mine along the way, and he, particularly ahead of time, and then after, when I came down with the company, she was my right arm when I needed somebody to lean on in the company, so I knew.
Is that a little unusual for that time, that you have a woman who was so involved in business and really knew so much about
it? I think it was, yes. She was a very practical woman, a very delightful personality, and very kind. Kylie and she had a big family. They originally lived in the house out on Long Beach Boulevard, north of Bixby Road. One sat way back,
yes.
And that was the
La
state
Drive,
on,
yes.
La Linda Drive. When she moved out of there, they built on the corner of Long Beach Boulevard, across the street south of the house in there. They moved down to Signal Hill a little while during the oil field, but they had was being drilled. And Richfield Refinery blew out all our windows, and she moved out of that. John Bixby, of course, I never knew. He died in 80. About 88, Fred Bixby, his son, and Susanna. Now, Susanna, his sister, was a member of the board of directors of the Alamitos Land Company for quite a while, and in about 1943, I went on as a member of that board and knew her, that relationship. I knew Fred quite well because he was president of the Alamitos Land Company. And Fred and I always got along tremendously, and I used to call on him out at the Rancho Los Alamitos on company projects, and he had quite a stock of bonded whiskey that he had laid in Prohibition in 1918, and it was seemed to be bottomless, and we'd sit around there and have a nip some for an afternoon and talk things over. It was a lot of fun. He was a great raconteur and full of stories, cowboy stories and whatnot. So I got to know Fred very well in the later years of his life. Susanna, my only contact really with her was when she was in Los Angeles, lived out on... It doesn't matter. And Martha Hathaway, of course, I knew quite well because she was the one that really raised and acted as a second mother for my dad and his two sisters. And she moved up to Claremont, had a house at 8th and College Avenue in Claremont for a good many years. Actually, she was there when I was in college in the late 20s, and my sister ahead of me. Subsequently, she moved to, well, it was a big house, and she was a long way off, and she was getting quite senile. My dad convinced her she should sell the house up there, and she moved down to Cherry Avenue in Appleton, uh-huh, on the southwest corner there, and had a house there, and had a housekeeper by the name of Mrs. Allen. So that is this going back up to what some of my...
Just a moment. I neglected to mention Florence Bixby in that little listing
there. Yes, well, that's Fred. Well, she was, yes, she was a green, and she's a very delightful woman, and of course she was, after Fred, she got... What is it, aphasia or something like that? She really deteriorated and was not in contact. But when during those days when I used to go out there, while she was around, we used to go out there kids on the picnic that had a big barbecue, and he'd fix up the hay barn with some baled hay up here, and you could climb up the baled hay, and some loose straw down there so you could jump off in the hay, and it was quite a family affair, and he was sort of the grand patron, looked after all his relatives and whatnot that were related to him. But Florence, very delightful, very sweet woman.
I knew her well.
And it was a tragedy.
That's one of the things I'm interested in, is the day nursery. And I served on the board for 4 years before I went back to school. And so we are going to try to do some, you know, study, do more research on the nursery and her role in that, and certainly your activities in that, and I guess your mother.
Well, Benny was, my mother was one of the original founders along with Florence, and they stayed on that board for indefinitely. They finally had to sort of pass a law down there that you could only stick around so long. And then Betty was on it, and Betty was president, and Jean was on it, and
Jean was
president. Mm-hmm. And so it's been sort of a long history of the family all the way through with the day nursery.
And that's really quite an institution, because it has, you know, so many of the old people were on it to begin with. It's interesting. I was on the board 19 years. It's hard to believe that in my youth that they didn't have terms of office like we do now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we won't go into the nursery. We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Well, you say back in '03, what are your memories of growing up on Long Beach? And it would seem to me that maybe is, I can add a few little things, because living at Ocean and Gaviota, right near the ocean, and across from our house was 11th Place, and that was the only place from downtown Long Beach to clear out the east end that you could get down the bluff. There was a road at 11th Place going down to the beach. And in those days, when school was out, in the summertime, along with all the rest of the kids around the neighborhood, but the beach was an entirely different thing in those days, because it wasn't until 1925 that the federal government built the extension of the breakwater from the Los Angeles Angels entrance out to the present Long Beach entrance in there, and we had big waves, and the surf came clear up to the bluff and ate away at the bluff, so that sometimes at high tides, and particularly after winter storms, there was practically no beach left. In fact, the bluff was eroded, and after later on, the city filled it in, so it's an entirely different thing now. But we used to body surf. We had tremendous, beautiful waves all the way from downtown, the Virginia Hotel, clear on out east. When the tide was out, the beach was very shallow. Easy slope, and the tide would go way out. We'd have a wide space of hard sand beach, and we used to play touch football, and a good place to get crabs and clams and things like that. And we used to go for a Sunday drive every once in a while. Take the old Hudson 54 that we had back about the middle of 1915 or something like that, and load the family in, go for a drive on the beach. And we'd have to run down that hill and run through the dry sand, be sure we're going fast enough to get out of the hard sand, and then we could drive all the way from downtown Long Beach clear out to the entrance of Alamitos Bay. At that time, that was before Belmont Pier. That was before Belmont Pier, and there was a projection of sort of a hard adobe semi-rock at that point. It was known as Devil's Gate, which is a word I'm not awfully sure too many people remember, that there was a place called Devil's Gate that was knocked down, and really that's where the Belmont Pier is now, was at Devil's Gate. And you had to watch that, because if you got caught on the other side of it, came in, there was no way to get back up. You had to watch the tide and be sure you got on this side of it before you could get back and come up at 11th Place or go downtown and get off the beach down there. But people in those days dumped a lot of trash over the bluff to try and back up against the waves, because those waves would bang right up against the bluff, and that was true all the way, of course, clear out to Alamitos Bay. But the city's filled it in, so it's an entirely different thing, as I say now. One thing that I don't think many historians know about it, but fishermen used to come out and purse seine off the beach. And I can remember very well a wagon, horse-drawn wagon with a team of four horses coming out Ocean Avenue with a purse seine piled up on the back of this wagon on the flatbed on it, and on top of that a rowboat, and going down to the beach right below the house there, and then they would unload the purse seine, and fellows would get in the boat and they'd row out and set the purse seine around, and then when they wanted to bring it in, they'd hitch up the horses to one end of it and bring it in, and they'd bring this purse seine in full of fish. And they'd put the fish in barrels and put them in the wagon, and that was where they were actually purse seining right off the beach, right down below there at 11th Place. And that's rather a unique thing. Of course, the history tells about some of the first airplanes that flew out here, landed on the beach, mm-hmm. and they were the old cloth and bamboo and wire planes. My dad took a flight in one of those. My mother, when she found out about it, just almost had a fit. But we grew up, Betty lived out at 3010 East 1st Street, just a block from the ocean, out near Orizaba. In Orizaba, there was down at the beach, and there was quite a gang from that end of town lived on the beach around Orizaba in the summertime. Actually, the group that I went with, I'd go down at 11th Place, and the Cherry Avenue group, that was another group of kids from high school and whatnot. We always got together, sort of little fraternity sorority sort of an operation. One thing that I haven't seen, that was a very vivid childhood memory in many histories of Long Beach, was the streetcar grid that Pacific Electric had. Now, it's recounted that they came down American Avenue and turned west on Ocean Avenue. Then they would go by the Pacific Electric Station, which was in the south side of Ocean and Pacific. And then the tracks went on down Ocean to about Golden, around east of the flood control, up to the car barns and the yard there north of 7th Street. But also, the PE had quite a grid that covered Long Beach. At Willow and American Avenue was what was known as Willowville, and it was pretty well out in the boondocks then, and that's where the branch line known as the Newport Beach line took off and went across the north end of town sort of diagonally out, went clear through the town out south of what's now Appian, the Marine Stadium, along Appian Way across into Seal Beach, and hooked up in Seal Beach out near Anaheim Landing with the other main line that the PE had, which ran out Ocean Avenue. And down and out the peninsula, out by Belmont Shore, out here, out the peninsula, across the bridge over the Alamitos Bay entrance, through Seal Beach, and hooked into that line at Anaheim. Then that line went all the way down through Huntington Beach to Newport and Balboa, and ended up down there. Mm-hmm. Now, also in connection with that line, the PE had a branch that took off at Zaporia.
Yes.
Zaporia Junction, which is at the corner of Redondo and Anaheim. And there's a little old shopping center in there. The railroad, I guess the railroad is still active down to about Obispo, isn't it, down there, and they deliver in there, but then that right-of-way has been abandoned from there clear on down across through town. But another line came in from Zaporia Station down Redondo Avenue, and another line came from downtown out Broadway. And they got together at Broadway and Redondo, and then went diagonally across through the subdivision there, and hit connected with the Ocean Avenue line right about by Belmont Pier, and then it went on out there. And also, well, that line had a turnaround downtown. It would come up Pacific Avenue in front of 22 Pacific, the office, which mm-hmm. was very handy when you wanted to go down to the office. And I think it turned on First Street and went out and finally got out to Broadway somewhere. I don't remember that, but at Esperanza, which is, well, it's four blocks west of Cherry Avenue, Esperanza. They're alphabetically, in case you don't know, Alameda's, Bonita, Cerritos, Descanso, which is orange, the at Esperanza, Falcon, Gaviota, Hermosa, Independencia, which is cherry, Junipero, which is Juan Apero, and then it goes east. But the line out Ocean Avenue went right in front of our house, and we had a motorman on there that sort of had a case on an upstairs maid that we had, and he'd start ringing. He had a ring, and she'd lean out the window and wave a dustcloth at him, and he went by to my mother's great disgust. But when the Ocean Avenue line got out to Kennebec Avenue, it then got off the street and went along the bluff. And the Alameda's Land Company gave that easement to the Pacific Electric to go along the bluff there. It was originally part of this subdivision. And had subdivided lots along the south side of Ocean Avenue from Kennebec on out to to Belmont Pier, and part of those, the tail end of it, still those lots were still subdivided. And as you know, south of Ocean, in there's quite a little complex of houses. But when the PE abandoned that line, why, it reverted reversionary right back to the Alameda's Land Company. And then the Alameda's Land Company gave that right away to the city of Long Beach, and that's the way where the city got Bluff Park.
Oh.
It was given by the Alameda's Land Company to the city of Long Beach, all the way from Kennebec clear out to Redondo. And Redondo, it came off of Ocean Avenue and got back, it came off the bluff and got back on Ocean Avenue and went on down and connected with the line there at about Belmont Pier, and then went on out and went right on by here. But that's, and then this park that they've had in all this information and then they
bluff.
I guess they bluff, well, if the city's going to be stuck for about $9 million. That was reverted to acreage by the Alameda, and we owned that. We didn't turn that over to the city as a park at that time. Subsequently, it was traded off, and we ended up with a piece of property ranched down Imperial Valley through a series of trades. But that's the one that's been very controversial along there on that. And the city, of course, I think made a very poor choice when they didn't buy it for $1.75 million when they had a chance quite a few years ago. But anyway, that's a little bit of history, but the Bluff Park was a gift to the city of Long Beach when PE abandoned that line that ran along the bluff there on the south side of Ocean.
And I've seen some ads, advertisements on magazines at the Huntington Library. We were doing some research there about a year or so ago. And in which they were advertising the development of Naples.
Mm-hmm.
Now, PE or the Huntingtons were advertising the development of that. Did they have the Alameda's Land Company sold that property to the Huntingtons?
No, that came in, and I can't tell you. It's right out in here, and
mm-hmm.
it was a landfill,
mm-hmm.
actually, and I really don't know. And of course, this in here was Belmont Shore, and it was filled in. Where the chain of title, I couldn't tell you. George Hart has worked on a lot of that, and he could probably help you on that. Of course, that was all done in about the turn of the century, about the 1900s,
mm-hmm.
when Naples used to sit out in the middle of this marsh. And you'd have to come out here and go across the marsh to get to Naples, and then you went across the marsh to get over to Beach. I still remember that when Belmont Park in there, where we moved later on, was built in the late 20s, and just in time for everything to go broke, and they went back to bond. So we got our lot out there for practically nothing, this fellow that built our house. I think we got it for less than the bond for the improvements on. I can't give you any background on that, but what I reason I did here is Alameda's Park. That was later on after the annexation changed from Alameda's Park to Bixby Park, but that was Alameda's Land Company gave Alameda's Park. But what I'm talking about is the road was changed, Ocean Avenue out here, and you can see these lots that were subdivided on the south side of Ocean Avenue, mm-hmm. all the way from Kennebec, clear down to Redondo, right in here. There, you can see the little bitty thing. That was the Devil's Gate.
Oh.
That's where Belmont Pier is, right, oh. right there.
I see.
But that was reverted back to acreage when they re-subdivided this going out here and put the PE tracks along on the bluff there. I've never really seen it recorded anywhere about the streetcars that did run out through the East End. That was the principal means of transportation back in those days. They ran double truck cars, small additions of the big red cars, out for a while. And they were rather expensive because they were big, had a motorman and a conductor. They put some little cars that just had two wheels and it bounced on it, and the motorman was both motorman and conductor, and just one entrance up in front, like a modern bus, and they ran those things, and they teetered like this, I remember those. But when the PE gave up those lines around in the East End, why, then a very famous thing was developed called a jitney bus, the old Model T Fords, and anybody could get a license for $5, I guess, from the city to run a jitney. And for a nickel, these people just ran all over town. Some of them were supposed to be Ocean Avenue, and they'd have an Ocean Avenue sign, but if somebody lived a block or two inland, they'd very gladly run you up around the corner down, and then load them up with people sitting on doors and everything else. So that was just the original taxi cab in Long Beach with the jitneys. I don't know how much more you want me to talk about. I have some very vivid memories of the corner of Pacific and Ocean Avenue, which was by the office, and there was a Green Crown drugstore on that corner, and it was one of those wonderful places in a kid's mind that had a soda fountain and wire sort of chairs with a wire back like that, and tables with a little marble top and chairs around it, and the guy presided at the, made chocolate malts and sundaes and root beer floats there, and that was an absolutely wonderful place. It smelled like medicine and tasted like heaven. Mm. Across the street on the south side, upstairs was the Crystal Cafeteria, which was really quite a spot. Everybody used to go to the Crystal Cafeteria. It had sort of an upstairs veranda that looked across at Lincoln Park, and we could go down the line there and get nice potatoes and country gravy and all that sort of stuff. The one other item that seems to have maybe been dropped a little bit along the way is the Salt Lake Railroad, which yes. is covered. And Union Pacific took over the right of way, but it used to come across the saddle on the west side of Signal Hill and over to down California Avenue to Alameda's, down Alameda's. And then where the Harbor Bank is there, they cut around the corner there and went west on Ocean Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And the tracks when they went through downtown Long Beach were between the PE tracks and the south side of Ocean Avenue. So all the traffic that came down the old Salt Lake Railroad, it was never a passenger line, it was freight only from the harbor would come down, go through downtown Long Beach, and go down across the bridge at the entrance to the Long Beach Harbor now that had a bascule bridge in there, come off Terminal Avenue and then come through downtown Long Beach. And they had a 10 o'clock train that came through there at night. It disrupted things because a lot of people used to park, that go down the pike, would park on the railroad track, that created lots of confusion. There was a great day when they chopped off that railroad line and brought everything in to the harbor by way of the Alameda and down that way and onto Terminal Island over the Ford Avenue Bridge. But that used to be quite a disruptive element to have that freight line coming right down through the center of town. Remember that very well. And, of course, there was the Pike. Lots been written about the Pike. Onion Gulch, we call it, Wild Oak Theater, where we used to go watch Perils of Pauline, things like that, the Hoyt Theater, and at the corner, I guess, Cedar Way and the Pike was the Majestic Ballroom, which was a great Nicola dance.
What about the Plunge?
Place. And then there was the Plunge along there, and also there was, of course, Loof's merry-go-round, we call it. We didn't call it a carousel in those days. And the Jackrabbit Racer and all were down there, and the place smelled of hamburgers and fried onions and popcorn and saltwater taffy and all those nice things.
I love the C.C. Lawrence.
Yeah?
First and an Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they had everything, you know. It was kind of a general store, and particularly firecrackers at 4th of July. We used to go down there and shop when I was a kid. And just could spend all morning, you know, picking out your firecrackers one by one, practically. It was a great place. I loved it.
Well, when I first remember that end of town, which, of course, in 1915, when the war started, World War I, I was pretty cognizant of Kaiser Bill and how we hated Kaiser Bill and all the war songs and whatnot. But there were very few houses or apartments along Ocean Avenue at that time. There was practically very little between our house on Gaviota and two blocks west of there to Cherry Avenue and all those along there, both on the north side and the south side of Ocean Avenue, developed. After that, as a kid, I just loved to run through those houses and bring home some nails and boards and things. During the World War One, from our house clear up to an apartment house at Hermosa, on the corner of Hermosa, was open fields and full of Liberty Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody around the neighborhood had a garden in there, and a lot of gophers and whatnot, but it was a great time. I walked and rode a bicycle from there up to Carroll Park School. And there was a lot of that area back in there wasn't developed. So saw a lot of houses going up. And incidentally, mentioned in this book quite a bit as the old Balboa Studios.
Mm-hmm.
The movies really started in Long Beach between 6th and Salamitas Avenue. And Horkheimer was the fellow that was the promoter behind it. My dad and some very good friends of his brothers, Justin B. and Bill Cook, were involved in different things, and they were one of the original financiers when they built the Balboa Studios. So as a kid, I got dragged through down there. But they finally went on. But I remember, and it's still there, a house on Ocean Avenue where Fatty Arbuckle lived. It's right across from the International City Club and the Pacific Holiday Tower,
mm-hmm.
But right on the north side of the street is the house where Fatty Arbuckle lived. We always thought that was great stuff.
House down there on Ocean Boulevard, and that's where.
I'm just sort of rambling along here. Say different companies, the formation of the development of Alamese Land Company, Bixby Land Company, George Bixby, and Fred Bixby. I've sort of roughly outlined that, and I've sort of refer you a little bit to this book and others around that covers that a little bit. How have the operations of these companies changed as the area has become more urbanized? How did you see them functioning in 84? The Bixby Ranch Company has sold off almost all of what they have, except some around 7th and Pacific Coast Highway in there, where they have quite a few things going, and the oil fields that go from there down to what's the name of their development there at where 2nd Street and PCH, the shopping center.
Marketplace,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That they still have in there. And I have nothing to do with them. They're not connected with either the Alamedas or Bixby, except they're members of the Fred Bixby family are stockholders in the Alamedas Land Company, but not Bixby Land Company. Bixby Land Company. Of course, we were hit real hard by the Depression. I sort of mentioned that, but came back and found a couple of things were in pretty bad shape, and they were in horrible shape when I got put to work in 1942, and we still had about 4,500 acres of land and owed a lot of money. And my first job was to dig us out. And it took about 3 years to dig it out. We had to go into a selling program where we sold all but about 1,000 acres of the land. We kept the land at the very east end out by Los Alamitos. We kept that properties. And then we kept everything that was remaining west of Bellflower Boulevard. Mm-hmm. The part in between, we sold some to the city for water land, to the city for El Dorado Park and that area in there, and a lot to farmers. But we retained everything closer into town, so the Bixby Land Company operations now are concentrated, some a little bit in Los Alamitos out there, where we have some developments out there, and principally